Desert Diaries.
Hello. Arizona calling. And I know. It's been a long time. Too long. And sorry, the last few months have been, well, they've been quite a lot. Headline: trip to England, journey home, no baggage for 2 weeks, massive chaos trying to arrange two children, starting two new, different schools at opposite ends of the valley, no less. Work, chaos, work, big podcasting conference in Texas, operation on my mouth. 2 weeks saying, or rather mumbling, a lot. It was horrible. And, oh, well, here we are. Hi, how have you been? Well, as I sit at my desk, looking out the window to the distant mountains, which are covered in cloud, come on. Want my money back. I'm reminded we are rapidly entering what we in these parts call fall. Autumn to you and me. You can tell this because number one, there's cloud. And number two, the highs this week are just 38 degrees. I'm going to have to get a jerkin on. Good grief. Might need to put my socks on soon. But to summer, first of all, and our first trip back to England in 3 and a bit years. Whoo! So we were dead lucky that we managed to snaffle an amazing house sitter, a lovely millennial called Skylar from North Carolina, who, yeah, did speak like that. And actually, when COVID hit, Skylar gave up his apartment and has spent the last 2.5 years travelling around America, house sitting for people and exploring the country, all whilst working full time, totally remotely. Paying no rent, of course. I mean, what an absolutely brilliant life choice to make. I love it. It was a very strange feeling packing up the taxi and waving goodbye to the dogs and the cats and the fish and the lizard and the mountains and the sunshine and the desert and wondering, oh, how on earth am I going to feel when I get back to England for the first time? As we got on the plane, I couldn't help but think about the last time we'd sat all in a row on a transatlantic flight, coming the other way, of course, in 2019, having absolutely no idea whatsoever how the next few months and years would be. If you've got this far with me on this podcast, then yes, you will know that pretty much none of the things that we were worried and scared about actually happened. But lots of other horrible and terrible and scary things did happen, actually. But, you know, that's life, eh? So there we were, ready to take off. So we are sitting on board the plane, about to leave Phoenix, Sky Harbour. I think most people are on board by now. We've got about 11 hours to go. And then we will be landing in England for the first time in 3.5 years. I felt a bit emotional earlier when I was getting on the plane, when I saw destination London Heathrow. I thought, oh my gosh. Teenager, how do you feel about it?
Very excited, not only for the destination, but also for the plane ride. I love flying. Also, we have screens.
It's been a long time, actually, since you've been on a plane, isn't it?
Yeah. It's been, 3 years since we've been in. We haven't been on one since because of the bloody pandemic.
What are you most excited about, apart from people? In England, what are you most excited about?
Greggs.
And what are you going to have in Greggs?
Okay, so I'm going to have the cheese and onion pasty thing and the cupcake with the monster ring in it.
What if they don't have that cupcake anymore?
I will riot.
You'll riot?
Yeah.
What else are you excited about apart from Greggs?
Magul, which is the
Indian. That's an Indian in sale in Manchester. It's a very good Indian. Okay, what else?
Lucky Cherry, the Chinese. I can't wait for the prawn crackers because they don't do them here.
And of course, our family tradition trip to Blackpool, which we haven't done for 3 years.
Yeah. I'm really excited for the Grand National, and I think I'm going to brave up and try to do the Pepsi Max.
Right, it's freezing. Get your earphones out. We've got a long plane journey ahead of us. Bye.
Bye.
Teenagers and food, eh? Man alive, it seems to be their single motivation in the middle teenage years. Anyway, it did feel really odd when we eventually took off, as the wheels left the ground, and much like it was on the journey here all those years ago, my stomach was churning. I was so excited to go back, but again, not quite knowing how I was going to feel was something that I hadn't really anticipated. 11 short hours later, though, and there we were. Here we go. We're about to land. Look how green it is. It's so green.
Oh my god, the first thing I see is a football pitch.
Of course. Soccer. Here we go, we're nearly there. Oh, look at the houses.
Small little towns, look at that.
Whoa. Oh, red bus.
Oh, really? Where? Oh, yeah.
Here we go, mate. Here we go.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa! We've landed in England. Oh. A little round of applause.
We'd like to be the first to welcome you to London, where it's currently 11:40. Have a nice visit here in London or wherever your travels are taking you.
Manchester.
Thank you and have a pleasant day.
Okay. One more flight to go. Whoop. Okay. So now, I was really excited. I was also cold, but I expected that. I had put a jumper on for the first time in about 4 months. After the old transit bus and the trudging 45 miles down travelators and along corridors, don't you love an airport? We finally got to immigration, which of course we needed to cross through before we could board our flight to Manchester. Now, the small one was too young to use the automatic passport gate, so we joined the very small queue to speak to an immigration officer. Whoop! A real-life English person in England. Oh, it had been so long. So we bounced with quite a lot of excitement up to the desk. Hello, I said cheerily. Been anywhere nice on holiday? He said as I handed over our passports. Well, I said, ready for him to share our excitement. We actually live in America and this is the first time we've been able to come back to England for 3 years. 3 years, I beamed. His attitude, bang, like a switch flicking, totally changed. He sat back in his seat and, I'm not kidding, his eyes narrowed. The chatty officer had left the building. Are these your kids? He asked me without any warmth. Yes, I said. Where are their birth certificates? What now? Their birth certificates, where are they? At home, in a file? You need to travel with them. What? Since when? How do I know these are your kids? The 11-year-old then pipes up. Mummy and Lila look exactly the same. You've just told me, the officer went on, you don't even live in this country. How do I know you're not trafficking them? Because why would I tell you we don't live here if we, British citizens, are trying to traffic other British citizens into Britain? He stared at me blankly. You married? Yes, I said. Where's your marriage certificate? At this point, Dave is about to burst into flames. I think I may have even said the legendary line, leave it, Dave, he's not worth it. British popular culture reference there. What I'm seeing, continues the charming immigration officer, is husband, two kids, and a new wife, and you're trafficking them away from their mother into another country. Do you see, I said, trying to remain calm, that we all have a visa in our passports, showing that we all moved to America on the same day? And if you look through the passport, we've all gone to the same places at exactly the same time over the past 5 years. There are no extra stamps in the kids' passports except for the ones that are in my passports. These include moving, as I said, to America on the same date 3.5 years ago. You don't even have the same surname as then, he said to me. Oh, I do apologise, I said. Is it 1950 already? This did not go down well. He leaned forward from the booth, pointed his finger right at me and said, don't start. At this point, the 11-year-old is saying, but this is my mummy, in a really mournful way. And even the teenager has walked over and is clinging to my arm. I'm still having to hold down Dave, who is still on the point of bursting into flames. The charming man then sits back. Well, he says, I can see a family resemblance, so I will give you the benefit of the doubt. This time. But don't do it again. Do what again? Muttered Dave as we walked through the gate to officially step on English soil for the first time in years, frankly feeling completely deflated and upset. Welcome home. I mean, man alive. I get procedures and that, but having never faced this issue for the last, 15 years since the eldest was born, it was a bit of a slap around the face. And I also can't help but think the benefit of the doubt isn't exactly how anyone seriously suspected of trafficking kids should be given, right? But there you go. We were back! Yay! Now, Heathrow Airport was, how can I put this, a bin fire. For non-English listeners, this means kind of a hot mess, a disaster zone. Anyone who's turned on the TV or radio for the last about 6 months will know this, of course, but being in it, oh, those queues, those Harris-looking staff. I mean, it was no fun, but thanks to the holdup at security and then the mega queue just to go through security again and put our bags through, even though we hadn't been able to put anything in our bags since we boarded the plane in Phoenix. By the time we got to our gate for the flight in Manchester, it was time to board. I did, however, have time to pop into WH Smith. The newsagent that I had worked in twice, once before and once after university, I immediately bought some Skips. Oh, that sweet, sweet nectar of prawn-ish flavoured snack that kind of melts on your tongue before you can even crunch it. Oh, yes, we were home. Arriving in Manchester was, bizarre. Our home for more than 15 years. It felt both completely familiar and completely alien. We jumped in a cab to our friend's house and spent most of the 15 minutes drive, number one, panicking that the driver was on the wrong side of the road. Seriously, every time he turned a corner, I was like, but why are you? Get over. Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Simultaneously, we were open-mouthed and saying repeatedly, but it's so green. It's just so green. Arriving at our friend's house, the house where we'd spent so, so many happy evenings and dinners and parties and sessions putting the world to rights, I felt really emotional. This moment had seemed like it would never happen when we were in the full clutches of COVID. Desperate to ring the bell and get inside, because I knew there'd be a glass of red wine waiting for me, we unloaded our bags from the cab and I handed the driver my bank card. What's that? He said. To pay you? I'm not taking that. You're a black cab. There's a card machine right there. Haven't you got any cash? We've literally just arrived from America and we've been travelling for 14 hours. I need cash. I don't have any cash. I can drive you to the cash point. Will the meter be on? Yeah. I've got some money, again, says the small one coming to the rescue. And on the side of the road, the driver stands open-handed whilst the 11-year-old child counts out money she'd been given by her grandma for the trip, plus some spare change she'd collected when we still lived in England. £16.10 exactly. No ruddy tip. Yet again, a welcome home. I mean, thank goodness that red wine was waiting, because all I could say. The next day, we wandered into Sale, the suburb of Greater Manchester we've lived in for years until we made that leap in 2019. It's really hard to describe what it feels like walking down streets that you've walked down literally thousands of times before, and yet they feel alien. I mean, really bizarrely, I noticed loads of things I've never noticed when I lived there. There was a little cottage on the main road. Somehow it always seemed to gloss over, that sort of thing. The girls had been desperate to go to Tesco. I know, again, non-American listeners, it's like Fry's or Safeway or Woolworths or Coles. Just your basic supermarket. I mean, don't say I don't treat my children. What a holiday outing. We did it. We got into Tesco and it was like, oh yeah, it's just Tesco. Hummus though, 99 pence. You must know how exciting I found that. Throwback to previous episodes. Oh yeah. Greg's also, of course, at the behest of the teenager, was frequented. Hard to explain again Greg's for non-Americans. Kind of a cheapy bakery with all the things in it that are really bad for you and really delicious. You know what I mean. Now, again, sitting in the breezy afternoon, almost sunshine, eating baked goods out of paper bags, honestly, it did seem a bit more exotic in our memories. After a couple of days, though, we took a trip up to Blackpool, a somewhat faded seaside resort. Think Coney Island in New York or Luna Park in Sydney. It had been a massive treat to go as a child, though. Blackpool was once a really glamorous hotspot, a jewel in the crown of northern seaside resorts. Famous actors and comedians would have summer seasons, as they were called in Blackpool, where they'd perform shows on the pier twice a day for 6 weeks. They drew really big names back in the day, and the comics would make an absolute fortune with sellout shows all summer long. Those days are gone for sure, but, you know, for me, Blackpool still holds so many happy childhood memories. When my dad was a kid, his mum had been really poorly and he'd been sent to live with his auntie who ran a bed and breakfast in Blackpool for about a year. And he regaled us with the tales of his childhood, including wading into the lake at Stanley Park, which was a big, huge park in Blackpool next to a massive golf course. And there he would collect all the lost golf balls and then sell them back to the golfers as they came out of the clubhouse. And he did admit that when he and his cousins were desperate to buy the latest copy of The Dandy or really wanted to go to the cinema to see The Lone Ranger, they'd sometimes sneak onto the golf course and retrieve balls that were just out of the sight of the golfers. Then again, sell them back to the golfers in the clubhouse. Kids in the 1950s, eh? What are you gonna do? In about 2013, Dave and I had started taking the girls each year to the big fair called the Pleasure Beach. And when we left to move to the States, the small one had been furious that she wasn't quite tall enough to ride the Grand National, a totally ancient but still very classic roller coaster in which there were two tracks with two sets of cars on each track and they would race each other as you go round. It's the sort of ride that had this kind of added thrill when I was a kid. It was so old, I was utterly convinced I was going to fall out at any moment. There was just a handrail at the front to grab onto for dear life. That was it. So I was a bit disappointed, but also completely relieved to see they'd since installed actual seatbelts and other safety measures. Still great fun, but without that fear of impending death. When we'd arrived at Blackpool, we'd gone to the Pleasure Beach ticketing hall to collect our passes, and the woman behind the desk had said, "Oh, you're not at school today then," to the girls. "Oh, no, no, no," I explained. "We actually live in the States now, and they broke up from school on the 20th of May. "Oh," she exclaimed, "where do you live? I've got a cousin in Florida." "Oh, no, we're on the other side," I said, "Arizona." "Oh, yes," she said. "I've heard a lot about Arizona." "Really?" I'd asked. "Oh, yes, very windy place. Very, very windy." "Not really," I said. "It does get a bit windy during the monsoons, but mainly it's just ruddy boiling." "Oh, no," she'd said to me with that kind of confidence that only a northern woman of a certain age can have. If you've been to the north of England, you will know exactly what I mean. "It is very windy," she said. "That's what Arizona's known for." "Okay." We had an absolutely great time in Blackpool, eating freshly fried donuts, so delicious you didn't mind burning your mouth to shovel them in as fast as possible. We also bought Blackpool Rock, of course, a kind of stick of hard candy that only ever tastes of mint, despite purporting to be different flavours. And we bought coconut ice, which I haven't seen on sale anywhere for 100 years. Does it even exist outside seaside towns in England? Oh, it's lush. The beach, I have to say, was just beautiful. They've done a really great job in smartening it up, and it looked glorious in the late afternoon sunshine. It helped almost to heal the trauma of something that happened on that beach when I was 14. I'd been visiting on the annual family trip, and my mum and dad had let me take a friend, a neighbour called Faye. We'd bought some rock, we'd bought some Kiss Me Quit hats, and as two 14-year-old girls, we then decided to have a bit of time on our own and walked along the beach, kicking at the waves lapping against the shore and skimming stones. It wasn't long until a group of local lads came up to talk to us, being pretty shy and also hating the fact I wore glasses. I took them off as they approached. Yep, I was practically blind, but I figured if I kind of, you know, flicked my hair and channeled Madonna, I think I was wearing lace fingerless gloves at the time, all would be well. And it was. Chat, 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 little bit of flirting, nice fun on the beach. All good, until everyone decided to skim stones again. I'm really good at this, I boasted as I leaned down to pick up a stone. At this point, everybody started laughing. I realised the rock I'd picked up and was holding in my hand, yeah, it wasn't a rock. It was a piece of donkey poo. Ha ha ha! From one of the pack of donkeys who spent their days trudging up and down the beach giving tourists rides. Well, that little holiday romance was over before it begun. Oh well, at least there were still the donuts and the pleasure beach. After Blackpool, we headed off to Turkey for a week. Then that turned into 10 days and 2 weeks because of flight cancellations. But, you know, we really did pick the worst time to try and fly anywhere, I think. But hey ho, I love Turkey. The place we always visit is nestled in the south of the country, right on the Mediterranean, close to the island of Rhodes, actually. You can kind of see it on a clear day. It's a beautiful small town full of cobbled streets and whitewashed houses and just the nicest, kindest people and amazing food and amazing drink and those sunsets. Both of us actually had a load of work to do while we were there, and the 10-hour time difference with the USA was a little bit challenging, to say the least. And you know, I'm not sure all this digital nomad remote working thing is quite as blissful as it's often made out to be. Look, I can work from the beach, those Instagram posts always say. And yeah, you can. But when you're on the beach, don't you just want to be on the beach and not actually working? One does not cancel the other thing out. But, you know, despite being dead busy, we still did have a really wonderful time and did a fabulous kayaking trip to the sunken city of Kokoa. Now, we had just a brilliant guide on our 20-kilometre paddle who told us about how the whole area used to be home to smugglers. But aside from them, there was no crime. Our ancestors certainly were thieves, he said with pride, but they never stole from each other. Only the government. People lived without fear of ever being robbed, but at every turn, they tried to keep one step ahead of the tax man. He was the only enemy. Kokoa is an ancient Lycian city and it's kind of partially submerged just below the surface on the shores of Kokoa Island. It was really important as a trading hub back in the day, and I'm talking around the 7th century. But then it was eventually abandoned following multiple earthquakes and rising sea levels. It's really incredible to paddle over the crystal clear waters and see houses and rooms and staircases just underneath you. If you can get to it, do it. We had lunch at this amazing restaurant in a place called Cinema, an ancient city that dates back to the 4th century BC. After lunch, we scrambled up the hill past stone houses and shops, most of which were selling amazing locally churned ice cream. And there were structures built right into the side of the mountain. We climbed and climbed until we reached the Castle of Cinema. The castle was used during the Middle Ages by the Byzantines. We all think sound like a really cool group of people. In the medieval walls of the inner keep, there's actually the remains of an ancient temple. And there's even a little natural theatre carved into the rock where about 300 people would sit and watch plays. And that's a sign that the Romans settled there back in the day. The views from the castle are out of this world. You can just look out for miles across the Mediterranean, and the hundreds of little coves and inlets really show it's not that hard to imagine why this was such a hotbed of smuggling in this area. Heading home, our guide related us with stories of the farming communities that still populate the area. It's amazing to consider, he said, that most Turkish people in this area, however poor they are, have got two houses. one for the summer and one for the winter. In the winter, people were head down into the valley to hunker down against any incoming snow, keeping the cattle close around them. But come summer, the entire village ups and moves out of the valley to higher pastures, only to return to their lower houses once autumn was over. Turkey, it just is a wonderful place. I do love it. We headed back to England, this time down south, landing at Stansted Airport, near to my in-law's house. Stansted, it was not having a good time of it when we arrived. About 6 flights had just arrived and 4 of them had just been told none of their luggage was on board. You can really imagine the atmosphere, can't you? We eventually got to immigration. Say nothing, I hissed, remembering the bloody nightmare we'd had at Heathrow. Been anywhere nice? The lovely lady behind the desk asked. Oh, Turkey, I replied. Oh, great, she said. I bet you're looking forward to being back in your own beds tonight, though, aren't you, girls? Yes. Yes, we are. Our own beds. We all nodded in unison. That's exactly where we're going tonight. I mean, how ridiculous that we were worried about getting into a country that we're actual citizens of. But there you go. We were back in. Spending time with family was, of course, ace. And we also spent a short amount of time in London. We'd hoped to be there longer, but cancelled flights and blah, blah, blah. Heading back to the capital was, again, a really strange and familiar experience all at the same time. I'd lived for a decade in that city after leaving university. And so, whilst jumping on the tube and trudging around some of my old stomping grounds in Soho and Covent Garden and Camden, I didn't feel like a tourist per se. And yet, there it was again, that feeling of being other in the country I'd spent almost all my life in. But I did love being in London. There were just so many memories. After a night with Kate, one of my oldest best friends, which was brilliant, and we also managed to eat most of the Thai food available in East London. The next day, I met Dave and the girls in Camden, a place where I'd spent a couple of my absolute happiest years of my life, living in a teeny basement flat just around the corner from where Amy Winehouse lived at the time. I remember moving in aged 30, the first time I'd lived alone ever. I was really excited, but also nervous when the door knocked a couple of days in. I bounded over and opened it. "Hello," said a very handsome man. "I am your upstairs neighbour. I am from Colombia. Your cat puked on my patio." Oh, the joys of neighbours in carved up Victorian houses. We ended up getting on pretty well, actually, despite the fact that when he walked around, it sounded like a billion elephants in hobnail boots marauding across my ceiling. Plus, he played the trumpet. Ugh, that still scars me. Anyway, the highlight of Camden was heading to the Underworld, a rock club underneath a very old London pub called the World's End, where, on October the 12th, 2022, I went out dancing. It was already about 11:30 at night, I told the girls. I hadn't even wanted to go out, but I was persuaded by your Auntie Judith, who was staying with me. "Huh?" they nodded. "It was packed in there," I said. I remember dancing with some bloke who looked a bit like Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters. But then when he asked me if I wanted a drink, he had a voice like Mr. Bean. So I said, "No, you're all right." And I headed to the bar myself. I stood there for about 10 minutes. Auntie Jude was off dancing with someone and I very quickly got bored, I said. The girls looked like they were drifting off. I scanned the bar to see if there was anyone I could chat to for a couple of minutes, and I saw this man standing on his own, leaning against the wall. The girls by this stage are actually yawning. After a while, I walked over to him, I said, and I asked, "Are you going to talk to me or what?" Now there's some poetry. "Right. Do you know who that man was?" I asked them. They shrugged. "It was your daddy!" I waited for the lights to go on in their teenage minds, for them to share in the excitement of my story. "This is the place where I met Daddy. If I hadn't gone out that night, if Dave Grohlman hadn't sounded like Mr. Bean, if I hadn't lost Auntie Jude, you would not be here." "Can we get some chips now?" they said, looking at me as if I'd just recited War and Peace to them. "Yeah, okay." We did get some chips in a great pub called The Washington in Belsize Park, a place where I used to go afternoon drinking with my friend Ian, the one who now lives in Texas. Just a few minutes away, actually, from an English woman called Sharon, who, wait for it, used to be the manager of the Underworld nightclub during the time Dave and I met. I know! What a small world. And yes, she knows the story. Side note, that pub on England's Lane in Belsize Park was also a couple of doors down from an Indian restaurant where Ian and I went for a late night balti once. We were the only ones in there until another couple stumbled in just before closing. One of that couple? Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones. I could barely finish my bargees. Suddenly, though, our time in England was nearly over. We'd gone back to Manchester, seen a bunch more people, had loads of coffees, too many drinks, and it was just bizarre to see how everything and nothing had changed in England. My other big observation? English roads are terrible. Potholes are go-go. What is going on there? Anyway, I digress. It was amazing how all our friends looked pretty much the same, and it was also just wonderful how quickly we all slipped back into easy conversation. Some of them I'd spoken to loads online, and others I hadn't had more than a few scattered text messages, and yet it was really like I'd seen them all yesterday. Oh, I really, really do miss them. A lot. But it was time to head back to the scorched sand and the cacti. And so after an absolute nightmare of a journey, I won't bore you with the running and the crying and the swearing that was involved. I'll say no more. We arrived back in Phoenix. It felt really good, actually, to touch down on the boiling tarmac. Good to feel the jolt of scorching hairdryer wind as we crossed the skybridge into the terminal. I'd heard that the first time you enter the USA after getting a green card, you can get pulled into a back room while they check all your paperwork, ask some questions about your work and your life and all the rest of it. And we were ready for that. It'd been a long old haul back over the Atlantic, but we anticipated a good hour or so until we'd get out of the terminal. As we lined up at immigration, I had all of our passports in my left hand and all of our green cards in my right hand. And as we got to the desk, I handed over the passports first as the officer said, "Well, howdy, folks. Where are you visiting from today?" He'd barely finished his sentence when he noticed that I'd placed the green cards on the counter. "Oh, my mistake," he said, beaming. "It seems like you folks are coming home." He glanced over our paperwork and in a flash handed back all of our documents, smiled again and said, "Welcome home." So I know it has been an age since we last spoke, and for that I apologise. As I said, it has been a big old summer, but let's make a pact to keep in touch. I am back on the scene at facebook.com/seeyouinthedesert. So do get in touch with any questions you might have. I'll be sure to add those in to a future episode. You can also check out my pictures, like my recent solo sojourn into the desert at Instagram, where I'm at Sam Walker Radio. And if you would like to see a huge snake in a toilet, true story, then head to at Walker Sam on Twitter. Speak to you soon. And of course, see you in the desert.